Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new, amazing app. This one's a game changer. There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon, Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife, Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more. Plus, every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen. And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more. So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself. Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com.
Daredevil Events and Corolla Drinks present Rock at the Shop featuring Loxy.
Oh, man, I hear you begging, please. Ain't my decision to be kind.
July 29th at South Bay Customs in El Segundo, California. Loxy, plus the Smoking Kills.
Just another Southern California.
Rock at the Shop, July 29th.
Now the pretty girls start to look the same.
Corolla Drinks presents Rock at the Shop with Loxy and the Smoking Kills, hosted by comedian Matt Edgar, July 29th at South Bay Customs, 115 Penn Street, El Segundo, California. Get your tickets now at CorollaDrinks.com.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. The show's big on. Mandy, get on. And welcome to CarCast. My favorite, man. How you
Hello.
Doing, Matt DeAndrea?
I'm doing well. Better now. It's your favorite podcast.
Fabrice Katiba, I think we're saying that right.
I think so.
He's coming in here.
Yeah.
He's the owner of GT Technique. He brought in the race spec R8 Audi. It drives me nuts that Audi has two R8s.
Yeah.
One's a huge four-door sedan. The other's a nimble little two-seater with no back seat.
Yeah, but it's not the sedan's not an R8 anymore. It's an S8.
Oh, it's an S8.
There's an A8.
Right.
And then
and
the fast
S8.
Version of the S8.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah,
it bothers me that they have two 8 platforms that are the same.
I'm with you on that one.
It could only be confusing. Could there be no other way but making this confusing? Like when they go, you know, 11 years ago or 9 years ago when they go, hey, boss, we want to make a supercar. It's a mid-engine, two-seater, all-wheel drive supercar, and we want to designate it the 8. Doesn't somebody at Audi have to raise their hand and go, the car I drove here today with the huge back seat, that's also an 8.
Today, we could have done 9. We could have gone to 9.
Are we out of numbers?
Like, if BMW did the same thing.
I know. If we want to go to 9, do we have to buy that from Ford or something? Or can we just name it a 9? It's
right?
Like, well, let's just call it a 9. That'll stop the part where people are talking about, especially drunk at a Hollywood party, about an S8 or an R8. Most folks don't know. Like when you're trying to hit up a chick and impress her and she wants to know what kind of car you drive and you tell her it's an Audi S8 or an R8, she's not going to picture the two-seater and picture the four-door.
Worse could be if you're in the R8, like V10, and you go, I have the R8. She goes, oh, the big sedan, the family car. And you're like, no.
So you have
no.
kids.
Yeah.
Right.
So BMW has the M1, which we love.
Right.
And then they have the 1M, which is the little tiny car that's out now.
Right. But at least...
Or the 1 Series, whatever. I don't know if they... I think there's a 1M.
But at least the M1, they stopped making in 1989, right?
Yeah, but didn't they kind of sort of shut the door on the potential of doing, like, a supercar version that they could have done a new M1?
I don't know, but I'm with...
So they had to do an I8?
I'm with me when I say... look, I was just driving through, like, Altadena the other day... And
that sounds hot.
I came to the intersection of like Mountain View and Mountain View. And I was like, how am I in an intersection of Mountain View? And Mountain View Drive and Mountain View Road. I don't even like that.
Yeah. That's, or place and street or
Just get a new name. Just get a new name. Hence, by the way, it's why we name things.
Yeah.
There's only one reason why we name things, and it's to differentiate. It's like, I don't even like the juniors. I don't even, like, every once in a while, no. I got an email from Jim Kimmel or Jimmy Kimmel. His dad is Jim Kimmel. There's been times when I've replied, hey, great show last night or whatever, and it's his dad writing me an email because they're both Jim Kimmel. Like, it's just kind of voids it for me.
In life, anybody that I know that is in that situation hates it. Like, my brother is Dennis and my dad is Dennis. And
gay chef or boat repairman?
Boat repairman.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of range in your brothers.
I'm telling you, sometimes their credit reports get swapped. Like,
right.
Because it's just stupid.
Well, how can it not, if you're on Lakeview Road and Lakeview Place and you're driving staring at your phone and it's saying Lakeview. Or you've scribbled it down on a cocktail napkin and it's 1176 Lakeview. Well, of course it's going to happen all the time.
Right, all the time.
The one that drives me insane.
And when you live on that road, you got to, and people come over, you're like, it's Lakeview Place, not Terrace. And, you know, it's got to, you know, don't get confused. And
the worst is the Donnas. In Studio City, in the hills, in Hebrew Heights, they named every street Donna. There's Donna Dolores, Donna Pegita, Donna Sangria, like Donna with the Spanish surname behind it. I could remember the first time I was going up there with all the, I just wrote down Donna, like whatever, I'm Donna Dolores. All right, I'll just write Donna down. Oh no, they're all start with Donna. And then it's not only that, it's not Donna. It's not Donna Dolores and Donna Jake. It's Donna Dolores and Donna Pegita. Like, it's all just Spanish names. By the way, only Jews live up there. Not one Spanish person. There's not a Mexican who lives anywhere in one of those Donnas. That's where they film Boogie Nights. You see the Boogie Nights where they're going up? That's where the whole Mulholland murders, all the Lookout Mountain and all that. Those houses, that stuff with the Molina and the firecrackers and everything. Those are the Donnas. But
Do you think to solve the problem, is it New York that does it? Where every there's like a street and then there's Ave and then streets go north and south and Ave go east and west. You, it's just a big grid.
Can I tell you? Yes. What a lifesaver. Like when Jimmy and I used to go to New York and I didn't know, I'd never been out of North Hollywood. I didn't know where anything was.
I've only gone a handful of times. I don't really know how it works, but
it was we'd stay at this hotel on Lexington or whatever. And the studio was on, you know, 6th and whatever. And you'd start walking. And you'd start walking, and you go, oh, we're going to 6th. Well, this is 2nd. Then you go, oh, that's 3rd. Okay, go that way. Yeah, keep going. Otherwise, you just walk a mile in the wrong direction. Because if you just name the streets after presidents, and they don't go in any particular order.
Right.
Yeah. All right. We got a question. Put them in order. Butch, 63, from Brea.
Yeah. Good old Brea Mall. Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, man. You got a grandkid who wants to put a turbo on his Ford Focus?
I do. He's a good kid, and I don't want to jump too far ahead, but it's not that expensive. I've done some homework, and it's pretty cheap to do. I just wanted to get your recommendation, since you're a car racer guy.
You're the greatest grandfather in the world.
By the way, is the kid 11? He doesn't seem that old, Bruce.
63. Butch. I like this kid.
Yeah.
You're sharp contrast to my grandpa, which would be like, can I take some of this goulash back to my apartment? Not in our Tupperware. You cannot. No, you cannot.
You can scoop it in
your
hand.
No, we do not trust you.
Just make a little
bowl. We have pickle jars and we have mayonnaise jars that are weird and crusty on the top. And we will give you the goulash in one of those. But our weird old sun-blasted the Tupperware? No.
No.
No, no, no. No, we do not love you that much. Go ahead, Butch.
I'm sorry, man.
I know, it's
your
rough.
Your family is
They're
just
horrible.
Fucked up.
Oh,
I'm
my
sorry.
God. They're so horrible.
I heard some of
hey,
the stories
Max
about
Paddock,
the Broadway.
Next time my mom comes in here to help clean, you give her a piece of your... Oh. Max Paddock, have you ever met my mom?
I've never met your
I
mom.
I didn't even know you had a mom.
Have you ever met my mom? Do you know that my mom lives less than 3 miles from here? less than three miles from here and has been alive the entire time I've owned this shop.
I have to see.
I don't
believe it.
Yeah, there's no way. There's no way that's true.
Questions are emerging.
But my dad always buffing out those Nissans, always tuning, always wrenching, always. My dad lives 6 miles the other direction. He's never Well, he was here when he did a podcast.
Yeah, but that's the only time I saw him. That's the last time I saw him was his last podcast.
All right.
The first nine times I saw him in there, doing, I had no idea who he was.
Oh, my dad?
Yeah. He never, like, said, hey, I'm...
He doesn't know how to do that.
You know.
Hey, Carolla, that time that you told your mom you would give her a free driveway and a carport and she was too lazy to get a bid? I mean, come on. He's buying you a damn driveway and you're going to sit on... I mean, geez.
Now, to be fair to her, she had to pick out three bids, and I was going to pay the middle bid. So it wasn't just one bid. She would have had to open the phone book to the cement section or the concrete pouring or the driveway section and call up three people to come out.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to pick out. But people always say, like, I don't get it. I don't get it. What's wrong with her? Like, who wouldn't want a free? The part where you don't get, that's who they are.
Yeah. I feel like even getting the bid can be delegated. Like, I could have outsourced that to somebody.
She could have got stepdad John to do that.
You know?
A
niece or nephew even?
That's called depression, but most importantly, it's called being a loser. Like, that's how you're a loser. Busted up driveway doesn't make you a loser. Not being able to get a free one from your celebrity son?
Yeah.
That's loser. All right.
That's pretty damn but lazy. She must have been date raped by your dad, dude, because I think she's so lazy she would have never had sex.
Yeah, although I don't think my dad could get a boner. I don't know how we got here.
Oh. Oh, man.
All right, Butch.
So listen, it's a Focus hatchback. It's a nice little car. It's a 5-speed manual. And what should I do? Go with the Ford stock parts from their racing division, or should I go with a Whipple or something like that?
What year is it?
13.
There's tons of great kits that work now, right?
Yeah.
Like it used to be when we were doing it, it was kind of catch as catch can. Like, get the right size turbo, make sure you get the right size turbo, and then just kind of hook it up and keep your fingers crossed. And
yeah.
Now they just have full-blown kits, right?
You know, there's a handful of kits out there, and if you ask around on what's popular, what's selling well, look at some of the forums on what it takes to install them, what kind of reviews are out there, but... for the most part, I think you're gonna find something that's pretty good. Like, I wouldn't find some of the Chinese junk off of eBay. Like, if you're worried about the quality of the products, then go with a name brand that is out there, or go, like you said, go from the Ford Motorsport catalog, the Ford Racing catalog.
Yeah, and I agree. Just go online, get the feedback, see what people. What people did to get it done, and it's easy now that you're online, Grandpa Butch. That's an old school name, Butch.
Yeah.
All right, why don't we get Fabrice and get him ready to come in? I'll tell you about a loan back for a fourth season with a crazy new twist.
I like
that's right. Rules have changed. 10 survivalists are still dropped into an unforgiving wilderness, but now it's 5 competing teams, brothers, fathers, and sons, and a married couple. All right. It's a different kind of survival show. Besides their teammate, they're truly alone. No camera crews. They film themselves. No gimmicks. No forced challenges. Teams are split, equipped with 5 items each. To win, they must find each other and survive the North Vancouver Island the longest. It's an unforgiving wilderness. $500,000 is at stake. Tune in for an all-new episode that is Thursdays, 10 o'clock, 9 central, on History Alone. No gimmicks, a different kind of survival show. Let's get it done. Let's go to History. Thursdays, 10 o'clock, 9 central. Fabrice, good to see you.
Good to see you as well. How are you?
All right, so how do we do your last name? What'd I do? How'd I say that?
How do you say it?
It's Katiba.
Katiba.
Katiba. Right. Chris is right.
That's what you said, yeah.
We got it right.
Yeah.
GT Technique Racing. Am I saying technique right, or should I say technique?
Technique, pronounced the German way.
Oh, I like that. So last time you brought in your Audi R. Wait a minute. All right. Full race trim. What are we working on these days?
Not much. A new venture, actually. We opened up GT Technique about a year and a half ago now. Opened up a location in Irvine and in Miami. Wanted to really bring more of a concierge-type service to the aftermarket in terms of what we're doing in racing, in the professional motorsports, as well as club racing, and really just kind of make it a little more intimate
How does the concierge part of it work as you bring it up?
You know, it's... it's very custom tailored to each individual client. So depending on their needs and what their goals are, ultimately, in whether it's in racing or building a car, we kind of sit down with them. We go over a list of things that they want to do, what they want to achieve, and basically really educate them. Because a lot of people come to us and they really don't know. You know, they'll come to us and they say, well, I want to go racing. And, you know, I want this 900 horsepower car. And, you know, you've been around motorsports long enough to know that, you know, that doesn't necessarily translate to safety and or fun at the racetrack. They can get very expensive very quickly. So right. What we try and do is really custom tailor a program to someone's abilities, their needs ultimately, and where they want to be.
I feel like the sport is growing, and certainly road racing. I don't know, maybe because NASCAR's waned a little bit, or maybe it's just me, but I feel like I'm seeing more events. I'm seeing more race cars for sale at these vintage auctions we go to, and some of them aren't vintage. Like, there's more modern race cars. I just feel like Matt sent me some information about the Monterey Historics or Rolex Historics.
Yeah.
I keep saying the place is getting more crowded every year, more cars being denied, more entries, more crowded run groups, spectators. You know, as I go through turn four, or whatever it is, and there's those bleachers. Those things used to be very sparse. Now, we went to go watch a race last year, and we were trying to make elbow room to go sit in those bleachers.
Like, it was 70,000 people last year, and it's grown from like 50,000 to 70,000 in the last 6 years at just the Rolex Historics.
Right. You know? So are we finding that more people doing more track days, more of these kind of clubs where they show up and they have the garage and they want their car there? It's like, I feel like this is growing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, manufacturers have definitely caught on, whether it's, you know, road cars that you can buy today from the street that are more capable right off the showroom floor. Whether you look at a new Ford Mustang or you look at a Porsche GT3, I mean, these cars are very capable cars at the racetrack. The reliability has gotten better on cars over the last 10 to 15 years with modern technology. And manufacturers in racing have caught on. You know, they now build race cars that you can buy as a customer. And these cars are now trickling into the hands of individuals, private individuals. And they're able to go out to the track and enjoy them, you know. And, you know, with social media and just, you know, all around, the car community is really growing, which is great to see. You know, for a while there was a bit of a decline, but now I think with everything that's available to you, you know, at your fingertips, you can get out on the racetrack and enjoy your own street car effectively and have a good time and fairly inexpensively too.
Yeah, and again, stuff works. It used to be a lot of, you know, overheating and brakes going south, and it's just everything works now.
Your specialty is German cars?
It is, yeah. Mostly sports cars, German cars. We do some Italian stuff here and there, Ferrari, Lamborghini. But my mainstay has been Porsche and Audi over the last 25 years.
Your shop is full of Porsches.
It is, yes.
And is that because that's what customers are doing? Like, you're seeing, like, Porsche has been a pretty big supporter of going through their catalog of 911s or even Caymans and picking one that's pretty much track ready, other than a little bit of prep, maybe swap a seat or something and brakes and... And because it seems like your clients are buying fairly modern cars and saying, hey, let's go to the track.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, the new 911 platform, particularly the GT3, I think there was a study that was just released. Over 80% of GT3s are tracked at one point in their lifetime, which is, you know, amazing.
90% are advertised when they're sold, never tracked. So there's a math, there's an equation that's not working out. Because every single one that's on sale on Bring a Trailer's never been tracked. Never been tracked.
Exactly.
So that's a good thing. And I know you have an Audi Coupe, you have a Quattro, right, a 91.
Yes, a couple of them, actually.
Those things have gone up an incredible amount in value over the last few years. I mean, they've always been great. Everyone's always liked them. But Matt and I have sort of talked about this. We're always trying to kind of figure out which way the wind is blowing for the market on used cars or vintage cars or collector cars, whatever it is. It's down on a lot of the old Lamborghinis. The Ferrari's a little bit flat. Porsche jumped up hugely and this kind of leveled out, mellowed out a little bit. The B rally cars and older Audis and the midder Audis and a lot of the rallies, 80s, 90s rally cars or even rally street versions of rally cars, that market has gone insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there any thought to why that one? Is everyone just coming to be the right age for that or something?
I mean, I think, you know, for guys like us, you know, who are in our late 30s or early to mid 40s, you know, these are cars that we read in Car and Driver, Road and Track, European Car Magazine while we were in high school and in college, and we all dreamt about them. Now we can afford them. They've become relatively inexpensive. You know, there's very few of them, and they're just cool cars to have. You know, that late 80s, early 90s Group A, Group B era, you know, whether you look at the BMW E30 M3, the Mercedes Evo 190 16 valve, you know, the Audi coupes, you know, all that stuff that came out of the era, you know, is just, it's really good hardware. I mean, it's that entry where cars started to be fun, reliable, and just, you know, people are catching on. You know, the Porsche market, as you mentioned, went berserk. So people started looking at other things and what other cool cars can I own that are kind of got a retro styling and I can drive today, every day.
Well, you have an E30 M3,
mm-hmm.
which is one of my favorite cars just because
it's so nice. It's really clean because he takes it every Cars and Coffee, every show that's red, and it's just, it's mint.
It has a great, it's a great Euro German 80s look to it. And now, you know, BMW is great, but I couldn't tell the difference between a BMW and an Audi coming toward me at 200 feet anymore, or a lot of the Audis and a lot of the BMWs or a lot of whatever. Yeah. Everything's just kind of being shaped by computer. But this thing with the box flares and the tail in the back and the deck lid and just the way the glass and the above the rear glass on the roof, the way that was shaped in, like it just is insanely Euro. The inside smells Euro. Like everything just screams Euro on that thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're great cars. You know, manufacturers had to build 5,000 examples of a car that they would eventually sell for a period of time to meet homologation requirements for certain racing series in Europe. And the BMW 30 M3 is one of the most successful touring cars ever in history. So, I mean,
yeah, and it's weird, those, and it is true. I think those Mercedes 190s are coming up, the four valves, which was sort of the comp. Remember, you'd see the,
yeah,
and everyone kind of liked the M3s better, but the Mercedes were kind of cool too. Now, they're both like fairly gutless for what they were. Like, you could get in a bone stock Focus or Rabbit GTI or something, those cars now, but that's not the point. It's what they were when they were. Although, have you breathed on yours? You think about an Evo motor or anything?
Actually, my car has all the Group A suspension. It's got a Group A bolt and roll cage, so it's been lightened. The fenders have been widened to Group A spec. So, I mean, it's pretty set up. I mean, it has 200 horsepower, so when you're at the track, you flat-foot it around all the corners. But it's a fun car to drive. It sticks really well, and it just does everything so well. It's so well-balanced, you know?
Yeah, it's fast if you don't have to use the brakes.
Yeah.
You know. If you're just going around. How much do you do vintage racing?
Or we support vintage racing. So
you have clients that are doing vintage racing.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious to know how much of them are starting to get into that. I know there's a handful of clients, like you said, that have their GT2s, GT3s. But how many of them are saying, "Hey, let's go to Monterey or let's go to, you know, wherever"?
Well, the popularity of vintage racing has grown considerably. I mean, you know, you can get into it. Doesn't have to be a European car. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, Japanese cars that have come onto the market. I mean, you know, you're a big Datsun guy. I mean, you know what that's like. You know, old 510s are awesome to see at the racetrack. I mean, you really have to drive them. You know, I mean, and you know, the respect to the guys that really manhandled those cars back in the day. You know, whether it was that 935 Porsches, you know, old Jaguars, things like that. I mean, those are just fun cars. And again, I think a lot of people are just realizing, you know, I can go out, I can, you know, a car like this can be an investment also, and they can have a good time. And the camaraderie is great at the racetrack. I mean, it's just a different vibe in vintage racing, which is really kind of nice. I mean, it takes you back to the old racing days of what it was all about.
What do you do when you're setting up a vintage car for a vintage race? What are the things that you focus on? I mean, you know, you have to bleed the brakes and all that good stuff. You know, check the dates on the harness and that kind of stuff. But are there other things that may not spring to mind, you know, for that you like to focus on for setting the car up or getting it out or supporting it when it's out on the track?
my guys go through a comprehensive list of things to check. And, you know, as far as all the suspension points and things that can fail with just time and fatigue that you don't necessarily see. So we really kind of work with a lot of the manufacturers and get a lot of data that we can. And, you know, we reach out to some of the teams that still exist that guys ran. So, for instance, with Porsche, you know, I mean, Porsche Motorsport is here. I mean, they've got a good customer base with a lot of the vintage stuff. A lot of those guys from Andile are still around. So I have personal relationships with those guys. So it's always good to pick up the phone and, hey, you know, talk to this guy or that guy that was on the team in 1980 or 1985 or, you know, in the mid-70s. I mean, you know, granted, they're definitely retired and they don't want to be bothered, but it's always good when they pick up a phone and like, hey, listen, look for this kind of stuff for that. So,
well, who's doing it right? I feel like Porsche realizes that so much is heritage, so much is vintage racing, so much of this is their history and people out campaigning these cars and being seen. And so they want to make parts available. They want to make information available. I mean, we hear about that, you know, Lamborghini has started to do their refurbishing stuff.
Mercedes is getting into it. I don't know if they're doing so much on the motorsport side as they have their motorsports classic something facility where they you can go and get cars restored.
Yeah, but down in Irvine, Mercedes has their classic center. Absolutely. Yeah.
They do.
Yeah. But Porsche, like you said, has been a big supporter of the vintage racing side of it, right? And I imagine, you know, others got to step up or start to get into it. Maserati, Aston Martin.
Well, it's like Nissan. It's a weird question because I'm not sure, but it's like Nissan has not really paid that great of attention to their vintage, right, to their history. And I know that because I have a bunch of cars that they should have.
Right.
And I have them. So they didn't care about them. You know, these cars went for sale. There wasn't anything secret about it. They just did not want their twin turbo V8 79 280ZX. Like, I don't know why they wouldn't want that car in their museum, but they didn't want that car. Yeah. Maybe they do now. I think everyone went through
nobody's
that.
Called.
Yeah, why didn't somebody call?
Nobody sent an email. I'll check my voicemail after the show, but I don't think anybody's...
Yeah, so it's like Ferrari's out doing it, and, you know, Porsche's out doing it. Mercedes is getting into it. Nissan, I feel like I've talked a few... There may be a new regime who's getting a little more interested in it, but you take a company like Nissan and Datsun, so much history, insane amount of racing history... I feel like Mazda's stepping up and getting into their history a little bit, but like Nissan, like, meh, not so much. And it's like, I don't know, why not? Like, just low self-esteem. Like, you go out to, you go out to Mazda Raceway, or we know it as Laguna Seca, and there'll be a whole Mazda tent there and a whole Mazda team, vintage team,
absolutely,
set up there. Yeah. And they'll have their techs and their guys, and, you know, they'll be volunteering, but they're there. Like, they have a presence. They're into it. There's a bunch of guys driving 510s and Z cars, but that's just like Bert from Lancaster. It's not anybody.
Yeah, yeah. BMW brings a group out there as well, and it's always like one of the guys that runs, I don't know if he runs the M1 car, or one of the Batmobile cars.
There'll be a few
M1, like, you know,
a few
like
Batmobile.
He's vice president of something in motorsports, BMW.
There won't be any big BMW tent or trailer. Any Nissan tent or trailer out there. And it's kind of like, what's up, fellas? Like, why not be into
it? You know, I think with Porsche, you know, the company philosophy has been racing, right? I mean, Porsche has been a sports car first and, you know, a road car, you know, a daily driven car second. And I think over time, you know, there have been so many 911s that have been raced. And, you know, in the 70s, the RS, you could buy a street car and go take that car to Le Mans. I mean, literally, with minimal modifications.
Right.
And I think just that's Porsche's philosophy. You know, they're all about racing. It's just so deeply rooted in their history and what they believe in, even today. And I think that's, you know, and I think that just trickles down, you know. I mean, they're a much smaller manufacturer too, you know, so they don't have those, they don't have those big corporate policies they have to deal
with. A lot of the Porsche racing teams, are they the dealers that are racing the way Ferrari is set up? Like, Ferrari has a lot of their dealers that maintain the racing teams. And then if you're a customer and you just want to do Ferrari Challenge, you go to your dealer and, you know, and your dealer basically puts together your race team for you. And so it seems like every Ferrari dealer if they aren't involved in racing on some level, it's certainly an option for them. They can get into racing with their customers.
Yeah, Porsche is a little different. I mean, PCNA, or Porsche Cars North America as we know them, and then Porsche Motorsport North America are run as two independent companies, essentially. And they try to keep things separated. As far as the teams are concerned, you know, they're mostly privateer teams that are supported, you know, or recognized per se. I mean, we run a 991 GT3 Cup in the Pirelli Drivers' Cup Series, so we're considered a recognized team. So we have a relationship with Porsche Motorsport. And again, Porsche does a little differently with their racing. It is separated, I think, just because of, you know, all the lawyers, and, you know, we live in Sioux Happy, California, and
sure,
amongst other places. And again, like I said, because it is so deeply rooted in on the professional level versus sort of the amateur level, I think just Porsche has, you know, they really defined customer racing in that respect.
So what, let's talk about your business. If, let's just say I got hold of my new, I just bought a brand new Audi R8 with the V10 in it, and bone stock, but a nice car, and I brought it to you, and I said, I want to make it unique, I want to make it different, I want to dial it in, and I want to make it my own. How would we sit down and start talking about price? Would we sit down and start talking about how tall I was? what I want to do with the car?
What color wrap?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, you know, we definitely sit down with you and, you know, get a better understanding of, you know, how you drive the car, how you use it, what you want to do with it, and then ultimately, you know, custom tailor a package. Whether it's the suspension, we'd address suspension, exhaust, wheels. If you're doing track stuff, we would address, you know, the safety part of it with the roll bar, harnesses, potentially different seats, and really just kind of build the car around your specific needs and what your ultimate goals are with the car. So no two customers are alike. I mean, I've had cars come to me and the customer's like, you know, I want a twin turbo R8. And we're like, okay, well, we can build that for you. He goes, I'm never going to go to the track. I just want to drive it to Cars and Coffee and just say I have a twin turbo R8 and go canyon cruising. Other guys are like, listen, I've got, you know, a manual V8 R8. All I want to do is track stuff. So we'll lighten the car, you know, put all the safety features on it, upgrade the suspension, make sure the car is reliable, and just more responsive, and just build a car around their needs.
What is a good value? We're talking about these R8s,
right,
with the gated shift and the V8.
The manual version of the V10s from a few years ago.
Yeah.
Or the V8s even, just first generation or second generation. I don't know what those things are trading for these days, but it seems like that'd be a good deal on a reliable supercar.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you can pick up a V8 manual 6-speed, you know, with low miles for $60,000 to $85,000. The V10s are, you know, they crest about $100, $110. You know, I have a manual V8 that I basically daily drive. It's got 65,000 miles on it, and never had a problem. You know, anything that's...
I'll give you $49.5 for it right now. Just leave the keys and Uber home.
That's right.
I'll give you $20 for the Uber. I'm not going past 20.
After that, you got, you're on your own. It's a shared Uber, basically. Split the fee.
So the, I like that car. I feel like an NSX, first, second, third generation, earlier, you know, NSX are cool cars, kind of going up, but still out there. I feel like, in that mid-engine department, I feel like the Ferrari 355, which I think is a great-looking car, you know, they started to really make a move, like, hey, man, this is going to be $100,000 a year from now, so you better jump on it. But they're like 60, 65 now, and there's a lot of nice ones out there, and that's a cool little piece.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I like those.
Yeah. That was the first generation of, like, really reliable Ferrari, you know, getting out of that 328 era and stuff. You know, good cars, you know. It was definitely a predecessor to the 348, you know, just reliability went up. Good cars, good styling. Fun, reliable cars. I mean, I worked at Ferrari when that car was introduced, so, I mean, it was a good
car.
How
many 355 engines have you taken out?
Oh, God, more than I care to admit, you know. I mean,
because you got to take them out for everything.
Yeah, major service, engine and gearbox out, reseal, you know, we do a lot of that in-house and stuff. But, they've, you know, like I said, they're a little
How
older.
Long does it take to take the engine out?
We usually can get them out in about 6 hours.
All right, so when you get a bill for 19 hours and dropping it through, you'd be like, ah.
Yeah. All right, do we have a question, Max Pana?
Yeah, of course. And if you guys want to write in, then please go to carguyshow.com, click the contact page, send your question in. This comes from Greg. He's from Washington. He just has a question about Goodwood. Hey, guys, I have heard you extol the virtues of the Mini Cooper, both classic and new. I'm hoping you consider a Mini for your next Goodwood run. Here are some reasons why. One, they are well-respected and represented at Goodwood. Two, they are small and less expensive to ship. Three, they are plentiful in the UK in race trim and could probably be rented. And four, there's a large classic mini following in the U.S. We have our own K&M Mini Challenge consisting of all classic minis this year at Sonoma Raceway. Where you could practice for next year. In case you're worried about fitting in one, Joe Huffaker has to be Joe Huffaker has to be 6'6 and drives a Mini. Yeah. So what do you think? Would you consider racing in one? Cheers, Gregory.
Well, I'm with you on the Goodwood thing. We thought about buying like a Cortina or something that was there and then just going there and racing it. The thing about the Minis in Goodwood is I believe they're like in the same class as like the Ford Falcons and stuff. So they got these huge 60s. There's even they're in the same class as the biggest saloon cars that are like 5,200 pound cars out and everyone's just sliding around on grass. You'd really hate to really get into it with one of those massive. I'm trying to think. Is it a Falcon? What do they have?
They had a Galaxy.
Galaxy. Yeah, like that's the biggest Ford ever manufactured is a Galaxy. Yeah. With the whole lump weighs as much as the Mini does.
It's in the same class because they have a big block Galaxy as well. That
I swear, and that's you're going to find Max Pat
is
going to
four Mini Coopers.
He's going to find pictures from the Goodwood revival of the Mini Cooper out there with massive. Massive Ford Galaxies.
Yeah, let's get some photos of the Mini Cooper on the track and see what else is out there.
Kick ass. Yeah. I had a good race with one. The guy wouldn't shut his lights off. Seca.
Which I didn't get because he had like 12 lights on the front. That feels like a real weight deficit. He had like all these huge rally lights on the front of his Mini.
All right, there's three Galaxies.
There's a Mini back there, the red one.
And a Mini back there, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of V8 muscle, a lot of Detroit iron for that Mini.
This picture proves your point. There are no Minis in the front of that pack.
So I had a great battle with a guy in Laguna Seca.
Yeah.
And he had all those lights just to bother me. I know it.
Yeah.
That's why he's running them during the day.
He had like six lights in the front of that.
Yeah.
It was the headlights and another four or something.
But I got him in my 510. But later on, the great John Morton could not get him in my 510.
Yeah, well, he's getting up there in age.
Yeah, that guy. I qualified it in front of this guy, but I didn't do the main race. I can't remember where we were going or what we were doing or something. So I just said,
we had to leave, come back. You had to do a podcast.
I said, John, you can drive.
Yeah.
But, that track and 510. Yeah, I like Minis. I'm down with it, but I'm going to meet you in the middle and probably go with the Cortina.
All right.
That's
also you
that's
become
me.
A Mini guy.
Like, yeah.
What, you know what I'm saying? Like, once you're not like me, like a Mini guy. Like now you're a Mini Cooper person.
Yeah.
And you've got to commit to that.
And I know they work. I know they work for rallies. I know they work on the track. I mean, they really work. I don't like the front-wheel drive, but I understand it.
Yeah.
I get it.
I like those, though. Those are cool.
Yeah. All right.
I like the vintage ones more than the new ones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But the new ones are nice, too. I'll tell you about Geico. Here's something I like. You got stuff to do. How about you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just head on over to your computer. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. One more time, go to geico.com. Yeah, you don't have to get out of your house coat. Just take your slippers and house coat over to the computer, turn it on, go to geico.com, spend a few minutes. You could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance at Geico.
Did you say house coat?
House coat. That's a bathrobe.
Okay.
It's a house coat.
All right.
You know what a bathrobe is?
Or I know who Hugh Hefner is.
A bathrobe and a house coat. Well, now you got to look it up, Max Babb. But I believe house coat and a bathrobe are synonymous.
Yeah.
I think they're exactly the same thing.
I'm with you on it. It's just not.
Just the initial dictionary definition is a house coat is a woman's long, loose, lightweight robe for informal wear around the house.
So it's a woman's robe.
It's a woman's. It's the lightweight kind.
Kind of like this thing.
Oh,
yeah, wow, so look at her.
It's a little more gowny than it is roby, but it is for around, you're not supposed to go to the market in it.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be around the house. But no dude can wear a house coat.
Can you get the mail in that? Well, I don't know what the cutoff is.
Let me see if I can find a mail one.
See if we can find that.
No, no, I mean, can you actually go out and get the mail in that? I don't know the etiquette on, like, walking out of your house.
Yeah.
Like...
I do. I get the mail.
And
I
the robe and the slippers.
I do the robe and the slippers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, your neighborhood, you can do it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like everyone in your neighborhood's homeless. You'd blend right in.
Well, the robes that they wear out there on those streets are a little different. They're not as clean.
So it's not really a bathrobe, per se. It's like the, but it...
That is a bathrobe.
Oh, okay. So I thought bathrobes are more like towel-y or...
Well, they can be made out of whatever material, just as long as they have a tie in the middle and they sort of drape around. So there's a dude house coat, too.
Yeah.
So house coats for a dude is a bathrobe, but for a chick, it's that smocky thing.
Sure.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think it's just what you wear around the house, I think. You call it a house coat.
This is why we call it CarCast.
Yeah.
We focus on morning wear, and if we have enough time, we talk cars.
I just crossed off like 4 emails we've got about house coats, so just
good. Conversation. Done.
All right, what is the next, what's the next and the best? So you're out here, and you're also in Miami.
Correct.
Because I always hear all the car shows and all that stuff. Is this just a bunch of money in Miami or a bunch of car nuts in Miami? What's going on in Miami?
I think there's a lot of both. I mean, you know, Miami's exploded in the last 10 years. It went from Miami Vice to Miami Nice. So, right. I mean, you know, there's a huge...
Are all the cars super douchey?
No, I mean, you know, there's a huge, you know, we talk
he
about
makes money off of that, though, so it's
like... I think it's Porsche's number two marketplace. It's massive. There's a big racing community down there with Homestead, Sebring, and all those tracks and stuff. And, you know, and there's a lot of money that comes up from Latin America now, you know, and these guys want to come racing and stuff. So it's a good melting pot.
California, everything looks like the show Ballers.
Is California?
Yeah, it is, actually.
California's number one for Porsche?
It is, yes.
So if somebody said... I have a, I'll try to pick a middle of the road kind of, I have an Aston Martin DBS, and I want you to breathe on it. You would know whether it was coming out of Miami or LA by what they wanted.
Probably the wheels.
The wheels, that's right. Yeah. You would have a thought, and if they wanted these wheels on it, like they're over 21 inches or triple chromed or whatever it is, or they wanted the insides painted and the outsides triple chrome or whatever, or matte or whatever it is, you would have a thought, like this come from Miami, this coming from Irvine.
I'm definitely going to get lambasted for this, but that's definitely a Miami thing.
Fabrice takes an order, it's like, hey, I got this DBS, I want to get these wheels on it. Do you need my address? Nope, you pretty much gave it to me. What do you order these wheels? We know where you are.
Go to, so online they should go to GT Technic, if I'm saying that right, it's TECHNIK.com. Is that correct?
That's it.
And they can go online and they can see pictures and they can find out about the company and what services are provided and all that good stuff, right?
Absolutely.
All right. I want to thank you, Fabrice, for coming in here.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you. And tell you guys, if you want to go to the website carcastshow.com, click their Amazon banner, and let's get Matt's Mustang put together and off my hoist.
Oh, yeah.
How about that? How about
let's do
off
that.
My hoist?
I'm a fan of that, too.
I'm a fan of that. So do that. And you can go to chassis, chassy.com. We have the Bug movie, a whole bunch of new movies showing up there, as well as the 24-Hour War and all that good
There's
stuff.
There's a fighting movie.
Oh, right.
There's a boxing movie.
Yeah, we got everything up there. We keep adding movies. So just go to Chassis and check it out. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla. All right. For Fabrice Katiba.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Got it.
And Matt DeAndrea saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.